This episode of Unfiltered is brought to you by Google Gemini. U.S. college students get Gemini's Pro plan free for 1 year and use the best model in the world for multimodal understanding. So whether you're uploading a video to get feedback on your presentation, uploading a photo of your homework to ask for extra help, or transcribing notes from a lecture you missed, Gemini 3 Pro can help. I'm honestly so happy and excited for all the college students out there because I wish this was around back when I was in school. This is such a game changer and so useful. I'm honestly a little jealous. So if you want to try it out, sign up to get more access to Google's most accurate model, Gemini 3 Pro. Unlimited image uploads, pro-level image editing, higher limits in Notebook LM, Gemini in Gmail and Docs, 2 terabytes of storage, and more. All you have to do is visit gemini.google/students to learn more and sign up. Terms apply.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
This episode of Unfiltered is brought to you by Google Gemini. U.S. college students get Gemini's Pro plan free for 1 year and use the best model in the world for multimodal understanding. So whether you're uploading a video to get feedback on your presentation, uploading a photo of your homework to ask for extra help, or transcribing notes from a lecture you missed, Gemini 3 Pro can help. I'm honestly so happy and excited for all the college students out there because I wish this was around back when I was in school. This is such a game changer and so useful. I'm honestly a little jealous. So if you want to try it out, sign up to get more access to Google's most accurate model, Gemini 3 Pro. Unlimited image uploads, pro-level image editing, higher limits in Notebook LM, Gemini in Gmail and Docs, 2 terabytes of storage, and more. All you have to do is visit gemini.google/students to learn more and sign up. Terms apply.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
We're digging into the Brian Walsh murder trial at 4:55 in the morning on New Year's Day of 2023. Someone in that house typed a question into Google. How long before a body starts to smell? In the hours that followed, more searches, best ways to dispose of a body. Can you be charged with murder without a body? Hacksaw, best tool to dismember. Of course it is. Who doesn't know that? Prosecutors say those searches belong to Brian Walsh, a Massachusetts husband and father of three, who is now on trial for murdering his wife, Anna. He's already pled guilty to dismembering her body and misleading police, but he says he didn't kill her. That's important. His defense, he found her dead in their bed, panicked, and made those searches while wrestling with what to do. It's a case built almost entirely on lies, lies to police, lies about his marriage, lies about where he was and what he did, and it raises questions that go far beyond the courtroom. How do people construct elaborate deceptions? What separates an everyday liar from someone capable of this? And how do we recognize the warning signs before it's too late? Joining us to break all of this down, the psychology of deception, is Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author of several books, one of them being this one, Nightbird. It is her latest memoir, available wherever books are sold. Siobhan is someone who's worked with both victims and perpetrators of violence for over 30 years. What first strikes you psychologically about the Brian Walsh case?
I had the immediate thought when I was reading about this one that this busts the myth of the criminal genius, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
You know, we've had all these characters that people have found so fascinating in movies like Hannibal Lecter, right? These mm-hmm. guys are super smart. In fact, most people who commit violent crimes are very low IQ. And this just strikes me as incredibly stupid. I think we're all looking at it, just shaking our heads going, yeah, you've got somebody with psychopathic tendencies, clearly, but the stupid factor here jumps right out at me.
So psychopathic tendencies, where does he cross the line into being a psychopath then?
You know, we can't diagnose without meeting him. That's always right. The disclaimer and going through an evaluation. But if what we're seeing is true, and we have no reason to doubt it at this point, we'll have to hear the whole defense and hear all the evidence. But this would be a person who's very comfortable wearing masks and lying, just effortlessly lying. And we can break down all the different ways the lies serve him at this point, but it's certainly predatory. And that kind of a pattern, yes, psychopathy is a continuum. Some people can just have a few of those traits and be a little bit that way. But when you get into murder, when you get into this kind of deception, a person would have to be quite psychopathic. And throw in the narcissism and the other things that are in cluster B, as we always talk about.
Damn.
Oh, he's a cluster, all right.
Yes.
He is a cluster. You know, he's the one in the encyclopedia where you look up cluster B and there he is.
Yeah.
With his picture.
Yeah. With messy hair.
Yeah. Everyone tells small lies, white lies, social lies. You know what I mean? From a clinical perspective here, what separates everyday dishonesty that we all are a part of from the kind of calculated deception that we see alleged in this case?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. You know, when the first thing when we think about how do people learn to lie, I think of the 3-year-old with crumbs all around his face and mom says, who ate the donut? And he goes, I don't know, right? So I think humans figure out as toddlers that lying can get you out of trouble, but that's a fairly impulsive kind of lie. And that's something people do. I mean, I think as we mature, we can grow out of that impulse and figure out, you know, it works better in the long run just to tell the truth. But a lot of people lie, and I'll raise my hand on this one, for social soothing, right? Telling a friend that, oh, thank you for that casserole. It was really yummy, when in truth, it wasn't very good.
Or frosted flakes on it. Yeah. It's supposed to be Wheaties.
Yeah. You don't want to hurt their feelings. Or no, your bangs, they're not too short. It doesn't look that bad, right? So we've all done that. The other kind of lying can be, you know, padding the resume a little bit to look better on a job application. But there's not really harm. You're not really hurting someone. It's just sort of self-serving. And that kind of thing is pretty normal. Maybe not reporting everything to the IRS. People, you know, we can't say everybody that does that is a psychopath, because that's pretty common. But overall, normal lying is to soothe other people or to avoid conflict or in some cases to get out of trouble. But psychopathic people lie to exploit and to dominate others or to gain power. It's usually calculated, goal-directed, and they don't have any remorse when they do it. And it becomes a pattern and a lifestyle. So there's a really clear difference between normal lying and psychopathic exploitive lying.
Does it evolve over time? I mean, everyone, you know, everybody's a kid. Everybody, I would say as a generality, I feel like we lie more when we're children as we're trying to feel out the world. And there's more white lies, more lies that just don't really mean a whole lot, but you're just kind of doing it. But then you grow up and you go, okay, well, maybe, you know, this is not the path that I want to, you know, be going down. For someone like this, it just kind of feels like they never had that moment or those years of growth. Is that what's happening here in a brain for somebody like this? Like those years of realization and growth just don't occur and they continue to be in that very childlike mindset? Or what exactly is going on? How do some evolve and some don't?
It's another wonderful question. You've got good questions, Tony. That's why I do this show, because you've got the best questions, better than all the other shows.
Thank you.
Yeah. But I think it's the lack of the development of empathy, right? Because we learn as in a normal family, a normal situation, we grow up learning that the truth usually serves us better. And we feel like we develop a sense of integrity. I know when my husband and I got together 20 years ago, we both had partners who had lied and been dishonest about a variety of things. And we made a promise to each other. We will not lie. We just won't ever go there about anything. And it's worked well. And I appreciate that so much about him. But I think in some people, psychopathic people, they never develop the empathy parts of the brain. They have a smaller amygdala, the connectivity. It's called there's actually a network in the brain where empathy develops. And whether it's biological, there's a lot of evidence that, you know, a certain amount of this is just in the wiring, the way they came, or the environment. Maybe they were rewarded a lot as kids. They got away with it. It worked better for them. Maybe they were raised with parents who had this kind of personality style. So yes, it's just in their core being. They don't have compassion for other people. Everybody is looked at as, what can I get out of this relationship and how can I exploit this?
Do they put on a show that they are compassionate people?
Yes.
Is that okay? So that's the facade. They look like they're doing all of these things, but behind the scenes, behind the mask, the knife is out.
Mask is the key word. They can wear many masks and switch them around depending on what setting they're in.
Does that go back to childhood, this lack of empathy? I mean, obviously there are certain factors where in nature versus nurture, and we're kind of talking about that, but the lack of demonstration of empathy at a young age, I'm wondering how much that plays into then how they walk out into life and the levers that they're going to pull, where they don't necessarily see the value in empathetic behavior because maybe it wasn't demonstrated to them, or maybe it was demonstrated and who they saw showing the empathy, giving the empathy, maybe they saw negative consequences for that person. Because being an empathetic person doesn't always mean that you're coming out on top. It means you are feeling emotions as a healthy human being would. Yeah. And you can also be run over by other people's trains of shit if you are a very empathetic person, but you still walk away, even though you maybe have a couple tire treads on you from being run over, but you still have the empathy. I'm wondering if any of those sort of factors play into people like this, where that's demonstrated at a very early age and they learn either this is not a good idea to be empathetic because they've seen someone be hurt for it in a very traumatic sort of way, or it's just, it's never been demonstrated. So it's never been a part of the repertoire of their life.
It's you know, certainly possible that they learned from somebody being a doormat. Maybe mom was a doormat and they said, well, I'm never going to be a doormat. I'm not going to go that way. The other component of it can be that they're given too much empathy to them as kids. So they get away with things where they should have gotten some consequences. And they never got consequences because maybe parents indulged them too much. And I've certainly seen a lot of that, where this kid was stepping on the rights of other kids and exploiting other kids and stealing from their friends. And they felt like they got rewarded for it, you know, or the parents made excuses for them, rather than holding them accountable and teaching them this is not acceptable. We don't do this to people.
Yeah.
Do you think we're seeing a lot of that right now in parenting, where it's soft parenting, it's parenting light, where little Jimmy can do no wrong, where if the teacher says, hey, you know, there's a problem here in class, and the parents don't look inward, they don't look at, well, what is my child doing? What's life like at home? Yeah. What are my own problems going on? They just immediately go, well, it's the teacher's fault. You fix it. Or it's somebody else. It's never a little Jimmy anymore. Is that sort of behavior? Are we seeing that? Really, we're starting to see everything kind of come to roost on that, with now generations of children that have been raised that sort of way, that when consequences, even small consequences for minute things that really wouldn't be big deals, but people just simply can't face basic consequences anymore. Is that rooted back in that sort of parenting of at a younger age, never facing it?
Yes, I'm just going to speculate. Yes, because I certainly know a lot of teachers. It is a hellish time to be a teacher right now, because parents come in angry and just vituperative and trying to start fights. And sometimes the teachers feel like they're in physical danger from parents because they've tried to give a kid a consequence for behaving badly in class or not giving them straight A's. I've got one friend who's a college professor, and my jaw just drops. And he says, this has just been recent in the last 5 years, that college students will debate and debate and debate about the grades that he gives them. And I mean, when I was in college, I would never argue. People didn't do that. You didn't earn the grade. You got the C or the D, right? Or you failed the class. And now students come in and they threaten him and they make complaints about him. And he's been a teacher for over 20 years. And he says, this is new behavior. And it sure feels entitled and narcissistic. And the parents back the students up. Sometimes he's getting angry emails from parents. So, yes, there was a comment, people don't want to take accountability. I think that's a cultural thing that we're seeing, which is troubling.
How do we reverse that? Yeah. Do we?
We die and we say, good luck, everybody.
Start over.
Yeah.
A lot of people like, well, I'm out. I'm checking out soon. You all have fun with this shit show.
Yeah. If I figure that one out, Stacey, you and I will write the book, right?
Yeah. We'll
write that book together.
We'll retire.
I do wonder about that, though, because I wonder if we're going to see the pendulum swing, because it feels like it swung really far over here to this sort of behavior where people feel like everything is up for debate.
Yeah.
Everything is not up for debate. Yeah. There are facts in life that are simply facts that are not debatable. They just are. But we seem to be in this world where everyone feels everything is up for debate. And that's a really weird way of thinking. I mean, because not everything is up for debate. Mm-hmm. I mean, why do you think, that's a very broad question. Why do you think that is, Siobhan?
Yeah.
But it's an interesting thing. It's an interesting trend, it seems, in humanity, where we're at that place. That's not how the world has ever been, where you can debate anything and everything that exists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a cultural shift. Why it's happening, I don't know, other than maybe when I was a kid, which has been quite a few years ago, but things were pretty punitive. You know, we had a lot of spanking, a lot of physical discipline. I mean, that was my mother's philosophy, is you just hit the kids when they do something, or they mouth off, or they have an accident, you know? So maybe we needed to find a middle ground. And just as a country, we've swung too far in the other direction of being really indulgent and kind of reinforcing narcissism in kids.
It makes me wonder, because this is a case that is very heavy on digital evidence, on the digital trail, on his Google searches. Basically, in a way, him finding community in a sense, not necessarily in a way where he's getting with other folks that have killed their wife and like, hey, how'd you do it? But he goes out there and he finds other people who have written other articles, pieces of content, pieces of information about said types of crimes, and how to handle them and how to get away with them? Is it partially because we are in a world now where you can find community of some sort in almost any sort of pathology that exists? So if this is how you think, if you have these bizarre thought patterns or thinking that, you know, you can debate this or I can get away with this because there's other people who are going to have information on how to do this. We didn't have that in the past. We couldn't just jump on our device or literally speak aloud now.
Yeah.
And have just the information fed to us from our devices around. Mm-hmm. Now that exists. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if it's because it has become such a norm that anybody's unhealthy pathologies or directions of which they think can now be backed up, can now be validated in a sort of way. Not that somebody's saying, hey, great job killing your wife, but there's enough other people out there that they're not alone in this. They used to be, you know, shamed. You'd be fearful. Oh my God, nobody does. This is insane. But because they can find others who have in some capacity, mm-hmm. it makes it more of an accessible thing to do, and then further feeds that path that they're on of pure madness.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. The internet, you can find a community for anything on the internet, and mm-hmm. sometimes you don't even have to look very hard to find it. And I see this a lot in sexual behavior with, you know, young men, young women. I mean, I've had girls as young as 16, 17 come to therapy and talking about they want labiaplasty, if we can say that on TV.
I don't think we've ever said that before.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, and why do they want that? Because they've seen images on the internet of what they think their body is supposed to look like. And there's nothing
wrong
with
that. We would never know that.
They would never even think that way. Yeah.
Yeah.
And certainly with anorexia communities online and the predatory sex offenders online, I mean, people can find a group for anything that they may have just had a curious thought about. And then, as you say, then they find that, oh, there's all these other people that are into this too and other people doing this. So,
yeah, it's gone from like shame to lifestyle.
Yeah.
And that's the weird thing about all this. Brian had prior federal convictions for selling forged Andy Warhol paintings. That's kind of the inspiration for our artwork on this. An elaborate fraud. He was convicted on that. He was wearing an ankle monitor. He's stuck at home. He can't go anywhere. He's taking care of the kids. What is a history of successful deception tell us about someone's psychology and maybe the ease at which he was able to do all of this while taking care of his three children as he's chopping up mom in the other room?
That's another thing that just jumped out at me. These poor kids.
Yeah.
Poor kids. I mean, how strange and bizarre is this? And yeah, this is somebody that's learned how to wear masks and can be very calculated. And when they find a niche, they can be pretty good at deception, at least for a while. And of course, the smarter ones, as I always say, become politicians, you know, not all politicians, but many successful politicians are quite psychopathic with wearing a mask and these qualities. But if you look deeper, you see this incredible dark side.
It doesn't make him a murderer, though, that he was a scam artist. Right. Where does that line get crossed that he deceives people and then he decides to take it a step further?
Mm-hmm. It had to come from thinking, because, you know, and again, even if he had never acted out, somebody that would commit murder has thought about committing murder. And then the other thing that just occurred to me right now, there are people who commit a crime, they get caught. It doesn't mean they haven't committed other crimes in the past that they haven't gotten caught at. And so there's just a lot of information we don't yet have about this guy. And what other kinds of things has he done that nobody knows about, because we don't have the internet history going back very long, right? Mm-hmm. It was just a few days before this event. And so who knows, if you went back years, who knows what you'd find.
You know, and Tony, you talked about this yesterday with Bob, I think it was, that, you know, maybe she was about to uncover a whole bunch of things that he was part of that we don't even know yet. And maybe she just had to go. Wasn't that what you were getting at yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, I wonder about that. I mean, ultimately, in a case like this, I mean, he might be, again, obviously we can't diagnose, but I was looking kind of at just like the narcissistic playbook on this. And ultimately, at the end of the day, it's exposure that they don't want more than anything. They don't want somebody exposing them for who they are, their masks coming off. He'd already been exposed for the art fraud. That's already out there. He already knew. The world was finding out about that. But it did make me wonder what else. What else is out there? What else would come up in divorce proceedings beyond mm-hmm. the art fraud as reasons that he shouldn't have custody of the children, reasons that he shouldn't get money, reasons, you know, for this and all of the things that could be exposed of him? And he knew, at least it appears that he knew, at least according to some of his Google searches, he was suspecting that there might be a divorce on the way. He knew or suspected the wife was cheating. He's looking up the best places to get divorced prior to the actual murder taking place or death, depending on who you want to believe here. And it really just made me wonder, was he preparing for that, preparing for whatever he needed to do to not take that blow, that next blow to his ego of the failed marriage, of all of his secrets being revealed? Anna obviously knew quite a bit about him, probably more than anyone did, and she can't speak about it anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's for a reason, mm-hmm. if we're to believe that he murdered her. So I'm wondering if this was one of those, well, this is what's going to happen. I'm probably going to have to get divorced soon, so I better pull this lever. And not pulling it with emotion that a healthy brain would have, but pulling it simply with the modality of, I have to do this because I can't let this mask slip off and she's going to make it slip. So what else do I do? Chop her up, of course, and then put her in 20 dumpsters. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if that was part of it seems crazy and complex, but to a mind like that, pretty simple A plus B equals C equation.
Yeah, certainly possible. And the other thing, you know, because we don't know how much planning specifically, I mean, the timing, did he plan to do this then? Or, you know, was there something that happened that she said, which is also possible, that caused him to be more impulsively reactive in that moment? But yeah, I think for a person to commit murder, it has to be something they've thought about to some degree. Mm-hmm. And then the other possibility is that she died, you know, accidentally, which we don't have any way to prove that at this point. Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem very likely. And why in the world would you then think the first thing you need to do is dismember the body rather than calling for help? Yeah.
Well, and don't forget too, I think it just, did it come out yesterday, the internet search about, hang on, let me go to my screen, about broken teeth. Can you identify a body with broken teeth? Like, that's not something, I mean, if you're trying to figure out how to revive your wife, I mean, like, none of this makes any sense. It just all points to, dude, you did this.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of damning information there. We're talking with Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author, about the Brian Walsh murder case, the disappearance and the death of Anna Walsh, the bizarre Google search histories, the just utterly bizarre behavior and utterly insane explanation that he simply panicked. And that's why his wife was chopped up into 1,000 pieces. And that's why he made these searches. It's all innocent. It's all normal. You can leave your comments in the comment section on YouTube as we continue to break through this. Prosecutors revealed those Google searches, including how long before a body starts to smell. Can you be charged with murder without a body? The search about teeth, about can you identify a body without teeth for dental records? So many of these made New Year's Day. What does this tell us about the kind of calculated research that he was doing and the mind behind it in terms of premeditation? Because we don't see, and this is part of what the defense is arguing, is that, see, he wasn't searching about murder before she died. He was just searching about best places to get divorced and things like that. And if you're concerned about that, that's a logical search. It really is. The murder, the disposing of body parts, the seemingly clueless look into what to do with the body, like searching if you can embalm someone in your house within 3 hours of her death. It seems insane. It also seems clueless and to have no idea, almost as if someone was met with a very sudden shock of, you're in this situation, how do I deal with it? Mm-hmm. What does it say about how this person is processing this information and how different it would be from a healthy brain?
I can't imagine dismembering a body, anyone's body, at all. And no. Certainly the parent of my children. What in the world? This is somebody who processes the world very, very differently. It's all about preserving himself. It's mm-hmm. not a normal reaction at all. It's someone who doesn't relate to other humans in a normal way. It's so far out of what, how could a jury listen to this and buy the story? I don't know. I guess we'll see. But it's so cold and so calculating. That's what makes it so weird, I think.
Yeah.
How is it different if somebody has a dead body and disposes of it in the woods versus dismembering? What is the difference? I mean, obviously both are gross and just for people who think on a normal way, this is wrong. This is not how you take care of a body, but there's a difference between I just dump them in the lot behind my apartment complex, or I cut them up and took them to a dumpster. There's a difference in that mentality, right?
It sure feels like there's a difference. And I don't know that I have any psych studies that can prove what the difference is, but it certainly strikes me as sadistic. And it's a level of dehumanizing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the thing that just makes us all cringe so much. It may be possible to put yourself in some bizarre scenario where you had to dispose of a body, not something I've ever Google searched about. Yeah. But you could probably imagine in a weird circumstance leaving a body somewhere. But the act of taking a hacksaw and cutting someone apart, it's just so far out of our reality that
It's shocking because it's a visceral response. Mm-hmm. I think most of us, we'd be throwing up. We're not, as humans, at least most of us are not wired to be able to do that. It's why when we smell the scent of death of a body, we are disgusted. It's a warning sign. Yeah. It's in us. It's archaic. That's a sign of warning to get away because you could be next. Mm-hmm. Someone who's able to just carry these things out as if they're adding extra pickles to a McRib, it's a different kind of wiring where it just seems to completely override that instinct, that guttural instinct, that visceral instinct that most people have. And I mean, maybe that's a good thing for some folks because we need surgeons. We need people who are able to be in the world that can see those things and not immediately want to vomit. Mm-hmm. But then you have people like this that seem to be able to do this and then go order the kids Happy Meals and, never mind, I just took her femur out over here. Hey, kids, what toy did you get this week? Mm-hmm. That's a very different way of compartmentalized thinking, is it not?
I would sure say so. It's in the bizarre category. And the idea that your kids are in the other room and you can be so cold and calculating and sadistic, it's, as I say, those poor kids.
That's mm-hmm. their mom that he was cutting up. And the other thing, were they seeing him taking out trash in bags? They had just had a party. Did it seem like he's just cleaning up? Did they actually physically see him removing things from the house? And gee, that was mom. Mm-hmm. Man,
I mean, and he's trying to, they're trying to portray this as a loving marriage, a good relationship. They're joking about their future and this or that. They're really trying to downplay that there was this cheating going on her part. He was kind of blindsided by it, but you know, he was in it to win it, and obviously it didn't go that way. This whole double life that they're trying to portray of this, what does it tell us about the facade that someone is able to put on in a situation like this, where they can sit there and they can act and say, oh, this is this great, loving, wonderful marriage. But then in literally the next breath, if this person dies, and let's say it was suddenly, let's say she did just have this sudden death for whatever reason. She wakes up, there she is, she's not moving, she's dead. To go from, oh my God, my wife died, to my next reaction is, where's the nearest Lowe's so I can get a hacksaw? It just screams of something completely different of what's mm-hmm. going on in the mindset. Even if you're in an unhappy marriage and you know that things are not going well, that's usually not where you're going to go if that partner dies of natural causes. You'd think there'd at least be the care, the respect for the remains of this person who bore your three children, who are in the next room having McDonald's. Yeah. Just the basics of this, just the human decency, but it appears he doesn't have any of that, and there are certainly indicators and signs that the human decency didn't exist with him. The example would be the way he handled the Andy Warhol forgeries that he was selling to people and got caught at, a financial crime, if you will. In some ways, it kind of bears example to Alec Murdaugh, if we're to believe that he killed his wife and son with all of his financial crimes. He's over here, he's able to do all this without blinking an eye, mm-hmm. but we're shocked that he could kill his wife and son. Maybe not so much, you know, because that mask that he's able to wear over here, he can do that pretty good. Who's to say, I mean, is there really a line with people like this? If you're able to pull just god-awful financial crimes on injured and maimed people, clients of yours, it's, I don't think that far of a stretch to think that it wouldn't be hard to go murder somebody over here. It's kind of a similar thing with Walsh.
Yeah, it does make you think of Murdaugh, and the particularly with Murdaugh, the cruelty in his financial crimes. It's at what point, because certainly not all cluster B people become violent. Mm-hmm. And even the ones that become violent don't stoop to this degree. But it certainly would weigh heavily on a jury that if a person can so effortlessly commit all these other crimes, who's to say that they didn't cross the line and do something like this?
Do people like this start to believe their own myth, their own story here? I mean, this is obviously, it seems like he's a serial deceiver in some ways. Mm-hmm. I mean, how is he managing the cognitive dissonance here? I mean, believing his own lies while knowing the truth, or is it just that magical compartmentalization that some of these people have where it just doesn't affect them?
I think it's really uncanny to what degree they can shift reality in their perceptions and come up with reasons and rationale why they did the right thing and why it was necessary, even though they don't completely compartmentalize and think, no, I didn't really do what I did. Mm-hmm. They can come up with reasons why, well, I had to do it. Therefore, they may go to sleep at night just fine, still believing that I'm a good person. You know, I did what I had to do. And in lesser degrees, you know, when it comes to the financial crimes, you know, I wasn't really doing anything wrong. I didn't really hurt anybody and I needed money. Therefore, it was justified. So mm-hmm. there's a lot of strange perceptual distortions that happen mentally for them. That's something that our brains don't work that way. So we can't really wrap our head around how would you sleep at night? But you know what? Most of them sleep fine.
Yeah. And that's a scary thing. Is there a world in which this literally is the story? She dies suddenly, and this is the solution he came to. Not because he killed her, but because his brain said, you got to hide this, because there's such a level of paranoia that he thought, I'm going to be blamed for her murder. And somehow in that infinite lack of wisdom there, getting rid of the body, making her disappear was going to be the best case scenario. We already know he doesn't make great decisions, but this would be like the ultimate in like horrible, horrible decisions, getting rid of the one thing that could actually prove you didn't kill her. You're destroying that in fear that they're going to find it. It's like, I'm afraid of what I'm going to be afraid of type thinking. Is there a world where this is just the reality, and it's crazy, but it is what happened?
I hesitate to say that anything's impossible. So,
sure.
You know, we can say maybe, but would I swallow that story? No. Anyone, even a spouse that you were divorcing, a spouse that you had very negative feelings about, your first impulse would be to call 911. That's what we
do. Think.
Yeah. Yeah. And it would never occur to me that, I mean, you might think, well, maybe they'll blame me for this, but it would never occur that, okay, now I've got to dismember the body and go through this elaborate story and then lie about it for weeks. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I can't imagine. I couldn't swallow that one.
Yeah. There's another aspect to the story that I find fascinating, and that's the allegations that his mother hired a private investigator just prior to the murder taking place or the death taking place here to follow Anna around, to find out if she was having an affair in D.C. It points to, obviously, there was some curiosity or suspicion that she might have been having an affair. So it shows that there's some awareness going on there. But I find it odd that the 40-some-year-old's mother is looking to hire a PI for her son to try and answer that sort of question. It really plays into the whole dynamics of this guy, of the handholding of mom. I'm wondering, obviously it would be pure speculation at this point, but it seems like a rather unhealthy dynamic if this is the steps that were being taken and by whom.
I think we can call that one out as weird. Definitely.
Yeah.
Was this an intent to try to get some kind of evidence that they thought would be to his advantage in a divorce? Possibly. Mm-hmm. People do that sometimes. I don't know that it always matters, but I guess it depends on the state laws if it's going to help. Mm-hmm. But for a mother to stick her nose in like this is weird. That is weird. And that's a sign, makes me think of enabling again, trying to rescue her baby. And that's never a good thing.
And that's what makes me think about his whole personality arc as a whole of like, is this how he's lived his whole life? Mommy's come to the rescue over and over and over. And it's literally still going on. And this is just kind of how his pathology works because of that sort of enabling. At least it's probably a part of it in some way, shape or form. It's part of the pie that makes up the rotten brain that he has.
Has a Norman Bates feel to it, doesn't it?
In a way, yeah. It does. It's certainly unhealthy. It's where the cord hasn't ever been truly cut.
Yeah.
In any sort of healthy way. Stacey, what are some of the questions that we're getting over in the comments?
Gen Z says, I'm still interested in the private investigator that his mom hired, follows the wife back to the house, and then never saw her leave again because he took her out part by part in trash bags. So if that is a true fact that this PI was hired, was the PI outside the house wondering, where's Anna? Why haven't we seen her leave?
No, I would think certainly they're wondering, that would certainly be part of it. What else do we have?
It's like Barry Morphew minus the art fraud was another comment that I saw that was interesting. More things going back to our discussion about kids and things that social media has a lot to do with the changes, because now you get blasted if you discipline your kids.
Yeah.
So just a lot more thoughts about things that we were talking about earlier.
Let's talk about Anna a little bit. Obviously, she seemed like someone who was successful. She had a good career going. She was the breadwinner. She wasn't, you know, performing art fraud for a living, as Brian was. And she was really kind of keeping the ship afloat. And they both seem to know that. That's been evidenced in some of the texts and writings and communications back and forth between the two. That being said, you're successful, you have three kids, she's obviously somewhat unhappy or seeking some sort of validation elsewhere from probably a more stable human being. That's why she's allegedly was having that affair. Why stay? I mean, it's a simple question so many people are going to ask, and it's a very complex answer to a certain extent. But why do we see this so often where you have one partner that really has their shit together and then the other one over here that's, you know, literally one step away from prison at any given moment in their life by their own choices?
Mm-hmm. We have to wonder about his ability to charm and manipulate, which at this point we don't know that. But that would be my guess, because very intelligent people can be bamboozled. And often the person, you know, we'll just say the criminally oriented person knows their vulnerabilities and knows how to manipulate them. Mm-hmm. And there could have been a million ways that she was bright and successful and seemed to have a lot of power in the world, but she felt confused about him. And I've certainly been there, and I think a lot of us have. And it does sound like, because of the affair, she was working her way out of it. And often that's how people end relationships. It's more of a behavioral acting out. But when they're having trouble just making a clean break, they work themselves out of the relationship by having an affair. And then it becomes, well, see, now I've done this, I've really got to end it, I've got to get out of it. So that's quite possible.
And I wonder, and I want to get your response to this, because I think a lot of people feel this way when you have a partner that is toxic, that has something that's going on mentally, whether it be a personality disorder or something of that nature, that is just wreaking havoc, causing chaos for everybody. If you're the sane partner and you're the one that's doing everything and keeping the ship afloat, there's also a significant fear in most of us of, okay, if I do leave this, if I do end this, well, my kids are going to have to spend 50% of their time with this other person. That's going to be the law, unless I can prove something really, really dramatic here, because that's what it really takes to not have that happen. And even then, half the time, they still end up having to spend 50% of the time with the dangerous or toxic, manipulative, personality disordered individual, because the courts aren't going to see it that way. So a lot of people sit and they stay and they feel like they need to be the referee. Yeah. And they need to be the person that's going to be the padding on the walls for the sake of the children.
They're protecting. Yeah, they 1,000% can't protect.
When, yep. Been there, done that.
Yep.
Yeah. Because of the fear of the consequences of, well, at least if I'm here, I can be the padding on the walls for the kids. I can at least monitor what's going on here with this other parent. What would you say to someone out there watching or listening to this who's identifying in some way, shape, or form to this case, going, I get it. I get why she stayed. Because of those kids. There's three of them here. And if she leaves, then that means that's 50% of the time that her kids are with that. and you don't have control of any of that. And control's not even the word, but just you don't have the oversight to protect your children in a situation like that. What do you say to a mother, to a father who's in that sort of a situation prior to being murdered, who may be experiencing that right now?
It's a nightmare. It's a nightmare when kids are involved. And yeah, custody can go 50-50. It can even go 100% to the person who's so messed up. I mean, I've seen that happen, because they've got funds to hire a great lawyer. The other person may not have funds. And often the one with the better lawyer ends up being the one that convinces the judge that they need primary custody of the kids. So it can go sideways. And, you know, it's hard to say what the path through it is other than get a good therapist and get the best lawyer you can possibly afford. It's a rough one. And
is it ever the answer to stay?
Well, there's a question.
Yeah, that's a really big question. And that's where I would say you've got to work that through on a case-by-case basis, yeah. You know, with people who have a lot of information and can really sit with you and go over your specific situation, look mm-hmm. for resources. It's tough. I mean, when there's physical violence or the risk of being killed, sometimes people have to go into a domestic violence program, a shelter, and try to disappear. I've seen people who felt they needed to do that. It's really a case by case thing. And the other thing that you know is relevant is people often intuit that if they leave, if they file those divorce papers, there's going to be something big and bad that happens. And a certain percentage of the time, it's murder. Or murder-suicide, or mm-hmm. familicide, where the kids are killed. And so I hesitate to always say, just get out. It's really easy to say that. It's a lot harder mm-hmm. to do that, and it can be very scary.
There's a very dangerous time window there when someone's going through all of this where those odds certainly go up. And I don't think many are super aware of that because, you know, you reach a breaking point and some people are like, I'm done. I'm out. This is it. But having some strategy in that process can not completely negate your risk factors. They're always going to be there if you have an unhealthy cluster B type partner that you don't know what they're capable of. But there are certainly ways of, I guess, cushioning the blow to other said brain to maybe reduce your odds of something horrific happening. What can you speak to about that dangerous period when someone's trying to get away but not trying to, you know, necessarily blow up the ship and then get hit in the head with a piece of shrapnel that flies off of it?
It's really rough. I mean, you really do have to sit with them and, you know, meaning speaking as a therapist, and go over what are the risk factors here? Mm-hmm. Does this person have firearms? What kind of violence has there been in the past? Because I can even think of several cases where one is a woman who's a Facebook friend who went to stay with her parents and took the kids. And the guy came over with a gun and shot the parents mm-hmm. and her. You know, the Facebook friend, obviously she survived. I had another couple where the guy came over, shot her in the back through the window while the kids were home. And then shot himself. She did survive as well, fortunately, but she will never be normal again after being shot in the back. So it's really hard to say. And in both of those cases, that was a surprise. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't have any hints before that was going to happen. So it's one of those things where, you know, it's just a really hard call. And so I would hesitate to give global advice on how to do it when, you know, you don't know who you're dealing with.
I think that's where some of the fear comes from too. It's not just, I don't know what my life is going to look like when I leave this marriage. It's what's going to happen when I finally, quote unquote, pull this trigger, pull the ripcord and say I'm out. Is this person going to snap?
Right.
Whereas we, you know, maybe saw some stress factors from them. Will this push them over the edge that they're about to lose half of their stuff? Maybe things mm-hmm. will be revealed. It's a very terrifying time.
It is a terrifying time. And I've been in the position of having to do, it's called the Tarasoff warning, based on a court case by a therapist who heard about a therapist who heard threats from a client about killing his ex-wife and didn't do anything. And the woman who was killed was named Tarasoff, was her last name. And So therapists are now required. We are supposed to, if there is a credible threat made, we are supposed to contact law enforcement and make every attempt to notify the victim. And I have had to do that on a number of occasions. You know, I never had a victim, someone that, you know, I was working with the perpetrator or the victim where it happened, where I heard a threat and then didn't act, you know, but I've certainly had to call police because, you know, it's all about confidentiality. We are not ever to break confidentiality except in a case of abuse, violence, or this kind of a threat. And I have made some very, one on Thanksgiving a number of years ago, I was down at the police department showing texts that I had gotten from somebody making very clear threats who had gone out and bought a gun. And he was my client. But yeah, I had to break confidentiality. And then I was afraid for my own life.
Sure.
Because we lived in a very small town. It wasn't hard to find out where I lived. And, you know, it was not a good situation. So therapists can get frightened by it too.
Sure. I mean, and what is, I mean, twofold, like what is the person who's receiving this information supposed to do with that? When the therapist calls and says, hey, I got a client that's your ex-partner or whatever they are, and they're talking about killing you. They, you know, maybe they bought a gun, maybe they didn't, whatever it may be. Okay, you have the information. No crime has been committed yet. Police really, they can't necessarily act on much at that point, can they? I mean, in some ways, it feels like, well, this is a great, I mean, I hate to use a term, it's a great way to stir the pot even more of some of a pot that's already almost boiling over. If someone's already expressing these sort of things, then they find out, oh, they found out my plan. That feels like it would almost like, well, we just added a little more baking soda to this and then now it's really flowing over.
Right, right.
And it, rather than it's not necessarily tampering it down, it's good. I certainly agree that person needs to be aware, but it almost seems like, hey, by the way, we just lit the fuse too.
Yeah. In this case, the Thanksgiving event, the police did go out immediately. And because I had shown them the actual text, I think they took it very seriously. And he had just purchased a gun, which he acknowledged in the text. It's like, how dumb is that? If you wanted to get away with this, you're texting the therapist. This is what I did. Yeah. And this is what I'm going to do. I guess it shows a high level of trust that he really
trusted an exercise.
Me.
It's like writing the letter you never send.
Yeah. It's like, this was, you know, because of course I had to turn him in. And, sure. And they did lock him up. And I think it was on the, you know, the threat of terrorist threats, I think is what they called it. And she was notified. And, you know, what can you do if I couldn't notify her personally because I didn't have her full name and I didn't have her contact information, but the police could found her. And, you know, sometimes people need to go into hiding, you know, go somewhere where he's not going to look for you and get away. And it's bad.
Do a lot of people, it feels like it could be something where a lot of folks will, if they're in that situation, not even realize they're in that situation. They're thinking, that can't happen to me. That's only on Dateline, it says everyone who's ever been on Dateline. And then the thought process is that, you know, they're going to be angry, but it's not going to go that far. That's not the truth. In so many cases, there's a reason that all these people are on Dateline and they're on our show and on everything, because these sort of things, they happen. They happen in real life. They happen in every community. They're not stars. There's nothing special that makes them, you know, worthy of that. This is going to be something that happens. And these are just the cases that we hear about when they're on Dateline or something like that. For people in relationships who may recognize some of these patterns, what are some of the warning signs that someone is capable of this kind of deception, manipulation, and violence before it occurs? Are there signs that people can look at and should be aware of and not just brush off as, they're spouting off?
It's tough. I think somebody who's got anger management problems, somebody that puts holes in walls, I'm speaking of my late husband.
Sure.
Somebody who kicks the dog, you know, who has this, and maybe they look completely charming on the outside, and everybody thinks what a great guy he is, or she, right? It can go both, mm-hmm. both genders here. We usually think of men doing these kind of things, and usually it is, but you know, it's that ability to be the chameleon and to compartmentalize mm-hmm. and show the world this completely charming side. And that's when people go, well, that's the real him. That's, mm-hmm. that's the person I'm in love with, or that's the person I fell in love with. And this other part of him, you know, that's not really him. And I just encourage people to look at the whole and mm-hmm. to see that this is a person with, you know, a dual nature, and you have to take it seriously. And as I describe in my book, because this feels like a setup for that, you know, I was married to somebody who was capable of violence, who killed himself the day I told him I wanted a divorce. And I was blindsided. I was completely shocked. I had no idea that he would ever hurt a person, you know, in that kind of way, and hurt himself in that kind of way. I mean, you just don't always know. So I think people have to be very careful about when they end a relationship, how they do it. And, you know, keep in mind when it comes to the suicide, that's a choice, and that's not something that you should ever stay in a marriage just because you get the threat of, oh, well, I'm going to kill myself if you leave. I think you need a therapist involved to help you through that. And if you don't have money for a therapist, go to a domestic violence program mm-hmm. and get help with that, because that can really keep you hostage. But in my case, I didn't know that he would do that. He was never suicidal. He had never threatened. He had never... Yeah. made those plans, but the way he did it, it was aggressive, and it was this staged scenario, and it was designed to say, look what you made me do, and I'll get yeah. you, I'll make you pay forever. So there, it's this unpredictable factor when you get into cluster B personalities that make it, I think, very scary, and we all have to take it seriously, that there's just the potential, but particularly if somebody has rage episodes, as my husband did, that was the reason I wanted out of the marriage, primarily was the duplicitous behavior, the lying and the rage episodes. And I wasn't hit. And so I didn't frame it as domestic violence because I didn't have a closed fist at my face, but I got pushed and shoved and certainly intimidated. And then yet there was this charming side, and that was the yeah. side that I always fell for. And some of these people can be very manipulative, and they know what your vulnerabilities are. And as a partner, you often have high empathy, but don't let your empathy trap you in a relationship where you're being hurt.
Basically, start being more glass half empty. I think it's a healthier, safer way of looking at things than half full. And it's not to be negative. It's because it's reality. Stop searching for the redeeming qualities and start accepting the repulsive ones for what they are. And right. ask yourself, there may be some redeeming pieces over here, but do you really want to stay in this life of black mold that's around you? It was once a lovely building and now it's been abandoned, and there's black mold everywhere. You can keep inhaling it. Isn't this a nice chandelier? It doesn't remediate the mold problem that that person may have. And that's what I'm looking at. I feel like in this case, with the art fraud that he was found guilty of, that's some mental gymnastics that you're going to sit there and try and find other redeeming qualities in your husband for mm-hmm. to stick around with. But again, maybe it's the kids. There's a lot of reasons that, that someone may be sticking around. But the constant search for redemption, that needs to stop in so many relationships, because it's just not there, and it's never going to be there.
Yeah. Don't fall in love with potential is what I always say, right? You've got what you've got, and this is what you're going to have. And don't hope is your enemy in that kind of situation.
It's the hope that kills you. That's what they say on Ted Lasso.
Well, and at the end too, at the end of the day, narcissism always wins. Not the narcissist, the narcissism wins, because it destroys the narcissist and anybody in its wake as well. My goodness. Great conversation, Siobhan Scott. Thank you so much for being here. If you want to read her book that she's been talking about, it is great. It is Nightbird. It's available right now wherever books are sold. Stuff it in a stocking. Put it underneath a tree. Put it underneath someone's pillow and just don't say a word about it. And they're like, what is this? You just wink and go to sleep. Why not? It's the holidays. Anyway, check that out. And leave us your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi if you're not already there, so you can join in those conversations. Until next time, for Siobhan and Stacey and Todd, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
This episode of Unfiltered is brought to you by Google Gemini. U.S. college students get Gemini's Pro plan free for 1 year and use the best model in the world for multimodal understanding. So whether you're uploading a video to get feedback on your presentation, uploading a photo of your homework to ask for extra help, or transcribing notes from a lecture you missed, Gemini 3 Pro can help. I'm honestly so happy and excited for all the college students out there because I wish this was around back when I was in school. This is such a game changer and so useful. I'm honestly a little jealous. So if you want to try it out, sign up to get more access to Google's most accurate model, Gemini 3 Pro. Unlimited image uploads, pro-level image editing, higher limits in Notebook LM, Gemini in Gmail and Docs, 2 terabytes of storage, and more. All you have to do is visit gemini.google/students to learn more and sign up. Terms apply.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
This episode of Unfiltered is brought to you by Google Gemini. U.S. college students get Gemini's Pro plan free for 1 year and use the best model in the world for multimodal understanding. So whether you're uploading a video to get feedback on your presentation, uploading a photo of your homework to ask for extra help, or transcribing notes from a lecture you missed, Gemini 3 Pro can help. I'm honestly so happy and excited for all the college students out there because I wish this was around back when I was in school. This is such a game changer and so useful. I'm honestly a little jealous. So if you want to try it out, sign up to get more access to Google's most accurate model, Gemini 3 Pro. Unlimited image uploads, pro-level image editing, higher limits in Notebook LM, Gemini in Gmail and Docs, 2 terabytes of storage, and more. All you have to do is visit gemini.google/students to learn more and sign up. Terms apply.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
This episode of Unfiltered is brought to you by Google Gemini. U.S. college students get Gemini's Pro plan free for 1 year and use the best model in the world for multimodal understanding. So whether you're uploading a video to get feedback on your presentation, uploading a photo of your homework to ask for extra help, or transcribing notes from a lecture you missed, Gemini 3 Pro can help. I'm honestly so happy and excited for all the college students out there because I wish this was around back when I was in school. This is such a game changer and so useful. I'm honestly a little jealous. So if you want to try it out, sign up to get more access to Google's most accurate model, Gemini 3 Pro. Unlimited image uploads, pro-level image editing, higher limits in Notebook LM, Gemini in Gmail and Docs, 2 terabytes of storage, and more. All you have to do is visit gemini.google/students to learn more and sign up. Terms apply.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
This episode of Unfiltered is brought to you by Google Gemini. U.S. college students get Gemini's Pro plan free for 1 year and use the best model in the world for multimodal understanding. So whether you're uploading a video to get feedback on your presentation, uploading a photo of your homework to ask for extra help, or transcribing notes from a lecture you missed, Gemini 3 Pro can help. I'm honestly so happy and excited for all the college students out there because I wish this was around back when I was in school. This is such a game changer and so useful. I'm honestly a little jealous. So if you want to try it out, sign up to get more access to Google's most accurate model, Gemini 3 Pro. Unlimited image uploads, pro-level image editing, higher limits in Notebook LM, Gemini in Gmail and Docs, 2 terabytes of storage, and more. All you have to do is visit gemini.google/students to learn more and sign up. Terms apply.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
This episode of Unfiltered is brought to you by Google Gemini. U.S. college students get Gemini's Pro plan free for 1 year and use the best model in the world for multimodal understanding. So whether you're uploading a video to get feedback on your presentation, uploading a photo of your homework to ask for extra help, or transcribing notes from a lecture you missed, Gemini 3 Pro can help. I'm honestly so happy and excited for all the college students out there because I wish this was around back when I was in school. This is such a game changer and so useful. I'm honestly a little jealous. So if you want to try it out, sign up to get more access to Google's most accurate model, Gemini 3 Pro. Unlimited image uploads, pro-level image editing, higher limits in Notebook LM, Gemini in Gmail and Docs, 2 terabytes of storage, and more. All you have to do is visit gemini.google/students to learn more and sign up. Terms apply.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play Stores.
This episode of Unfiltered is brought to you by Google Gemini. U.S. college students get Gemini's Pro Plan free for 1 year and use the best model in the world for multimodal understanding. So whether you're uploading a video to get feedback on your presentation, uploading a photo of your homework to ask for extra help, or transcribing notes from a lecture you missed, Gemini 3 Pro can help. I'm honestly so happy and excited for all the college students out there because I wish this was around back when I was in school. This is such a game changer and so useful. I'm honestly a little jealous. So if you want to try it out, sign up to get more access to Google's most accurate model, Gemini 3 Pro. Unlimited image uploads, pro-level image editing, higher limits in Notebook LM, Gemini in Gmail and Docs, 2 terabytes of storage, and more. All you have to do is visit gemini.google/students to learn more and sign up. Terms apply.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
This episode of Unfiltered is brought to you by Google Gemini. U.S. college students get Gemini's Pro Plan free for 1 year and use the best model in the world for multimodal understanding. So whether you're uploading a video to get feedback on your presentation, uploading a photo of your homework to ask for extra help, or transcribing notes from a lecture you missed, Gemini 3 Pro can help. I'm honestly so happy and excited for all the college students out there because I wish this was around back when I was in school. This is such a game changer and so useful. I'm honestly a little jealous. So if you want to try it out, sign up to get more access to Google's most accurate model, Gemini 3 Pro. Unlimited image uploads, pro-level image editing, higher limits in Notebook LM, Gemini in Gmail and Docs, 2 terabytes of storage, and more. All you have to do is visit gemini.google/students to learn more and sign up. Terms apply.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
This episode of Unfiltered is brought to you by Google Gemini. U.S. college students get Gemini's Pro Plan free for 1 year and use the best model in the world for multimodal understanding. So whether you're uploading a video to get feedback on your presentation, uploading a photo of your homework to ask for extra help, or transcribing notes from a lecture you missed, Gemini 3 Pro can help. I'm honestly so happy and excited for all the college students out there because I wish this was around back when I was in school. This is such a game changer and so useful. I'm honestly a little jealous. So if you want to try it out, sign up to get more access to Google's most accurate model, Gemini 3 Pro. Unlimited image uploads, pro-level image editing, higher limits in Notebook LM, Gemini in Gmail and Docs, 2 terabytes of storage, and more. All you have to do is visit gemini.google/students to learn more and sign up. Terms apply.